Parenting is a journey, isn't it? Full of amazing moments and, let's face it, some really daunting challenges too.
Definitely.
Highs and lows.
And right now, with the world feeling, well, pretty turbulent, maybe you're dealing with job stress, money worries, family changes, or just feeling totally overwhelmed, it can feel like everything's shifting under your feet.
Mm-hmm. Constant change.
So you wonder, how do I stay steady? How can I possibly be the parent my kid needs right now with all this going on?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take a pile of information, like the source material we're looking at today, a book really focused on parenting through these kinds of tough times, and we dig into it with you.
Yeah, we try to cut through the noise.
Find those key insights. Things make you go, aha, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Our mission for this dive is to unpack the big pressures on parents today, look at strategies the source offers for finding strength, for building connection, guiding your kids.
And ultimately, how to help set them up for a resilient future, all drawing on the ideas right from this material.
Think of us as your guides walking through these ideas together.
We'll look at what makes things so tricky right now.
Yeah.
The specific challenges the source points out, and importantly, the practical ideas suggested for handling them.
It's like acknowledging the storm exists.
But finding ways to be that calm center for your children anyway.
Right. Okay, let's start with the scale of it. The source says, you know, parenting's always hard. But there's something about now.
Mm-hmm. Extra layers.
What does the book specifically point to? What makes it different?
It really focuses on the external stuff. It calls them turbulent times, meaning like a shaky economy, job insecurity, financial stress, relationship breakdowns, even things like bullying, which seem, well, everywhere.
And these aren't just news headlines. They actually land right in the family home.
Exactly. And it kind of pushes back on that old idea, the maybe slightly optimistic idea.
That our kids will automatically have it better than we did.
Yeah. That's being seriously tested for a lot of families now, the source suggests. These big societal things directly hit a parent's ability to cope, the family's stability.
And the material gets specific about common challenges.
It does. It lists several things parents are wrestling with.
Like the anxiety around jobs, losing one, or just not having steady work.
Yes. Definitely. The immediate money stress, sure, but also that deeper nagging worry about the future, like their kids' education, their opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story about Mark and Leanne. Their industry got hit hard. Real financial pressure, worried about losing their home. But the interesting thing wasn't just their stress.
Right.
It was how the kids handled it. Because Mark and Leanne kept talking to them, age appropriately, focused on keeping the twins feeling secure. The kids actually adjusted better to moving to the changes than the parents expected.
That's fascinating. The idea that parents can get so caught up in their own money worries.
That they might, without meaning to, neglect the child's emotional side.
Yeah, and the stress shows up in the kids anyway.
That's the link the source makes.
Yeah.
Even unspoken parental stress can leak out. Divorce or major family conflict is another big one.
Okay.
The book shares Elena's story, telling her four-year-old her dad was moving out.
Mm.
The little girl started having accidents again. Bedwetting.
Oh, wow. Regression.
Yeah. It just shows how that kind of upheaval creates this stressful environment that can really affect a child's development, how they cope.
Access to good education is mentioned, too. How where you live or money can limit a child's options down the line, like college.
Right. And another one I think almost everyone relates to, the lack of work-life balance.
The constant juggle.
It's relentless.
Sure.
Trying to do well at work, be fully present for your kids. It's exhausting. The source says it often leads straight to burnout, making you less effective everywhere.
Yeah, that feeling of running on empty. The book also mentions just general stress in the family.
Yes, sometimes the turbulence is internal. Dealing with illness, and it specifically mentions increases in things like depression, ADHD diagnoses, or losing a family member.
Mm-hmm.
The Chen family story is really striking. They try to shield their kids from the stressed dad working crazy hours, mom dealing with illness. They thought they were protecting them.
But isn't it work?
No. Their son started getting stomach ache, became withdrawn. The change came when they started simple feelings check-in at dinner. Everyone shared one good thing, one challenge.
Even the parents?
Even the parents. It opened things up. The son's anxiety eased, the stomach ache stopped.
It really shows how trying to hide stress can sometimes make it worse than being open in an age-appropriate way.
It really does. Other things mentioned are just poor communication, maybe parents having totally different ideas about raising kids.
That can cause friction.
Big time. And what the source called the collapse of overall family structure. Basically, losing that built-in support system from extended family like grandparents living nearby.
That village feeling.
Exactly. And that loss, the source argues, impacts a child's feeling of security, even their identity.
So, looking at all this, it's not just a list of problems. It's how these outside pressures and inside dynamics mix together to make parenting feel particularly tough right now.
Right. But identifying them, seeing the landscape clearly, that's the first step.
You can't navigate the storm if you don't know what it's made of.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that leads right into the next crucial bit. Finding your own strength when you're in the middle of it.
The idea that these tough times, hard as they are, can actually force you to find strength you didn't even know you had.
That's the core concept. You have to somehow rise above your own stuff, your grief, your stress, whatever it is, to be that anchor for your child.
Mm-hmm.
There's this powerful story about David, a single dad, just devastated after losing his wife. He felt broken.
Yeah.
But when his little three-year-old needed him to explain death, needed him to be her rock.
He found something.
Her needing him gave him purpose. It pushed him to get help for himself, to focus on creating stability and even joy for her.
That's it, isn't it? Finding resilience because of your child. So what practical ways does the source suggest for finding and holding on to that inner strength?
Well, one is framing it as temporary, reminding yourself this hard phase won't last forever.
Seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And trying to gain perspective, consciously choosing to look at things differently, find the positives, however small. Planning helps, too. Just having a path forward, even if it's not perfect, gives a sense of control.
Okay.
And reassuring your kids, keeping the home environment as calm and positive as possible, even if you're churning inside.
And the book clarifies, this isn't about faking it or lying.
No, not at all.
It's about providing the stability they need from you.
Exactly. That necessary security.
Yeah.
Another technique is actively focusing on the good things still around you, finding the positives that balance out the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Renee, her husband, was deployed. She started a nightly ritual.
Yeah.
Everyone named three good things from their day.
Yeah.
Tiny things sometimes. And she made a paper chain countdown for his return.
Simple things, but powerful.
They helped shift the family's focus to the positive and reinforced that the difficult time was temporary.
And the source says this challenging role literally stretches you, makes you stronger, specifically for your kids.
It does. It also suggests journaling, writing down worries, fears, but also the good stuff, the challenges you did overcome. It helps process things, see your own resilience.
So facing the storm isn't just surviving, it's realizing how it can build strength you didn't know was there, which I guess leads to the next idea about weaknesses, turning them into stepping stones.
Yeah, this shifts the focus inward to the parents' own growth areas. It starts by saying, look, everyone has weaknesses, imperfections.
Yeah.
We're all works in progress as parents.
Totally, nobody's perfect.
Right, the point isn't flawlessness. It's being willing to see those imperfections honestly as chances to improve yourself. And that improvement directly helps your kids.
So it's not about hiding flaws, but using them.
Using them as a guide for growth. The source gives good examples. Diego, who realized he had a short fuse, like his own dad, he consciously worked on ways to manage his anger.
Oh.
Though admitting it and working on it, he not only felt better himself, but he ended up teaching his son valuable emotional regulation skills just by going through it. His weakness became a lesson.
And Sarah, the disorganized mom?
Yeah. Instead of just feeling bad about it, she created routines, checklists, involved the kids in making mornings smoother, like a game. She was open about her struggle.
And worked on it with them.
Exactly. And taught them problem-solving skills along the way. Her daughter apparently became the little family organizer.
That's great.
These stories show how tackling your own stuff directly benefits your kids. They learn by watching you learn and grow. The source admits, you know, it's hard to look honestly at where we fall short.
Mm-hmm. Ego gets in the way.
Totally. But as a parent, the book argues, you have to push past that discomfort to become your best self so you can better help your child grow too.
And you mentioned this connects later to parents wanting to be liked.
Yeah.
Maybe that desire can be a weakness to address.
It's all linked. Our growth helps our parenting.
Speaking of juggling, that feeling of being pulled every which way. The struggle for balance, especially when life's chaotic.
Oh, the universal parent struggle.
Mm.
Feeling like you're failing because you just can't do it all. The source says, look, in turbulent times, your priorities will shift. And that's okay.
Give yourself some grace.
Exactly. Take it day by day. Try not to overcommit.
And a really key point, just being physically there isn't the only thing that matters for connection.
So true. Kamal's story,
Mm-hmm.
working mom, feeling guilty about missing school stuff. She realized being there for 20 minutes but glued to her phone wasn't as good as 10 minutes fully focused.
Quality over quantity.
Absolutely. So she created specific times, sacred morning time, no devices, special Sunday adventures. She stopped trying to be everywhere.
You focused on making certain times count.
Right. And her daughter stopped mentioning the missed events and started looking forward to their special times.
That's a powerful shift.
It really is. Another big one. Know your limits and use your support system. Natalie, mom of three littles, trying to be super mom.
Get in there.
Ended up totally exhausted, impatient. Her wake-up call was her four-year-old asking why she was always angry. Ouch.
Yeah, that would hit hard.
So she listed everything she was trying to do and strategically got help. Preschool, carpools, even someone for laundry. She realized asking for help wasn't failing.
It was smart parenting. Strategic.
Exactly. It freed her up to be less stressed, more present when she was with her kids.
And taking me time, it's framed as essential, not selfish. A recharged parent is a better parent.
Yes. And using tech, smartly calls, texts, video chats when you can't be there. Also, actually scheduling family time, putting it on the calendar, protecting it, like dinner or game night.
It asks you, the listener, to think about your own balance struggles. Where could you use support? What could you organize differently?
Just identifying the pinch points is a huge first step towards finding some relief.
Okay, let's move to the absolute heart of it all. Building that unbreakable bond through love and support. The source is emphatic. Love isn't just nice, it's essential. Necessary for a child to thrive.
And how you show love changes as they grow, obviously. But that core commitment needs to be constant. It lists key ways to show this lifelong love.
Physical affection comes first. Hugs, touch, helps kids feel safe, learn how to express love themselves.
Yes, and this one is so important. Being there for the seemingly small stuff builds trust for the big stuff.
Ah, yes, a mirror in the broken toy.
Exactly. He used to brush off little things. But when he started really listening, helping fix that toy, his son later felt safe coming to him about his fears of death after grandma died. The son actually said, "I knew you would help because you always listen."
Wow. That direct link. Showing up for the little things earns trust for the huge things.
It absolutely does. The source also mentions being a role model of strength, even when you're struggling inside.
Mm.
And verbally praising them when they teach you something. That builds their self-esteem.
And letting go of yesterday's frustrations. Starting fresh each day. Showing forgiveness.
Crucial.
Yeah.
Making special dedicated one-on-one time for each child is huge too. Emily's strategy.
Yeah.
Just 15 minutes, totally focused, distraction-free, per child, per day.
Seems manageable but powerful.
It's reinforced by this really sad example in the book, a teenager who felt her mom wouldn't even notice if she disappeared. It's a stark reminder of how much kids crave feeling uniquely seen.
That individual connection.
Yes. And finally, just telling them, saying out loud, "It's an honor to be your parent."
Especially when things are tough, letting them hear that you're proud of them, proud to be their parent. That must be incredibly grounding.
It reinforces that fundamental love and support.
Okay, changing gears slightly. The source talks about an unexpected classroom, play, reframing it not just as fun, but as vital for development, with parents playing a key role.
Right. It says, for a kid, their favorite toy is often you, the parent. They need that FaceTime, that interaction, more than stuff.
And play isn't just fun time. It's how parents learn about their kids, teach lessons casually, show interest in their world.
Amir's story comes up again here. He noticed his son's language just exploded when he played with him. Alone, the son was quiet. With Amir engaged, he'd create these elaborate stories.
So the advice is get down on their level, put the phone away, really engage, make it dedicated fun time.
Exactly. Separate from homework or chores or discipline.
Yeah.
And make learning through play fun. Don't sweat the small stuff, like coloring outside the lines.
Right.
Encourage creativity.
Yeah.
Let them make a mess sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Foster imagination.
Yeah. There's a caution about too much screen time during that dedicated playtime, seeing it as potentially getting in the way of bonding and independent thinking.
Okay.
And this is interesting. Letting the child lead the play sometimes. Monica, the mom who tended to direct everything.
Yeah.
When she stepped back, let her daughter take charge. The daughter became more spontaneous, more independent. And Monica learned so much just by watching her daughter's mind work. It builds self-reliance in the child.
It's the quality of the play, the engagement that really matters, more than just hours logged.
It's presented as a really necessary, constructive part of good parenting.
which leads naturally to communication, introduced as absolutely key, not just telling kids what to do, but talking to them, and maybe even more importantly, listening.
Open communication is framed as vital for kids feeling safe and secure, especially when the world feels uncertain. Darius's story is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
He used to give vague instructions.
Causing frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when he shifted to being clear, direct, and explaining the why we need to tidy up so we can play that game, his daughter understood, complied more. Her language improved.
And she started coming to him with her own stuff.
Exactly. Because she felt heard and trusted him. Respectful communication is stressed, especially as they get older.
And tackling the tough topics, not avoiding them.
Yes. Lucia, talking to her young kids about their dad's cancer. It sounds scary, but she used simple language, a worry box, a journal, weekly check-ins.
So they could process it.
Right. Instead of letting fear fester silently, it actually strengthened their family bond, the source says.
That really makes sense. Talking through worries, even big scary ones, helps kids manage fear and anxiety, especially in these turbulent times.
The advice is, be intentional. Notice when your child is open to talk. Set aside time for family chats, dinner, game night where everyone can share without judgment.
And remember to focus on the child's feelings in those talks, not just your own agenda.
Making them feel truly heard, seen, cared about.
Okay, now here's a point that might feel a bit unexpected today. The source argues your most important job is being the parent, not the friend.
Yeah, the book really emphasizes this. It says wanting your kids to like you is normal, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But prioritizing being their buddy over providing structure and boundaries, that can actually backfire long term.
Why do parents fall into that friend first mode sometimes?
Several reasons mentioned. Maybe they lacked good role models for setting limits themselves. Maybe they're just unsure. Or it's that powerful desire for approval to be liked by their kids.
And the argument is being too lenient just to be liked actually harms the child.
Yes. It denies them the security that comes from clear structure. And eventually, they might lose respect for the parent who isn't guiding them.
The Jordan story really highlights this.
It does. He wanted to be liked, so no boundaries, late nights, junk food, no consequences. His son's preschool director finally asked him point blank, who's the parent here?
Oof, a wake-up call.
Big time. He started setting limits. His son protested at first, you're not fun anymore. But later admitted, Dad, you're not as fun, but I feel better.
Wow, I feel better. That says it all. The child needed the structure.
Exactly. Sophia's story, too. Strict parents made her swing too far the other way, too permissive. Her daughter became anxious. Only when Sophia found that balanced, loving boundaries, guidance did the daughter settle.
And Tanya, letting her son stay up late just to make him happy short term.
Caused behavior problems because he needed sleep and structure. The pattern is clear. Kids feel more secure with consistent boundaries, even if they complain initially.
So the message is, doing what's right for your child, even if it's unpopular in the moment, is more beneficial than trying to be their pal.
It's fundamental, according to this source.
Building right on that is discipline, framed not as just punishment, but as a tool for security and growth.
Right. Teaching discipline starts early. The effort pays off later. It's about kids learning to learning to operate within rules. They ultimately respect that.
It provides a framework. Give them security because they know the rules.
Exactly. And consistency is paramount here.
Mm-hmm.
Kids need to know what to expect, rules, consequences to feel secure.
And the advice for parents is stay calm.
Try to stay cool, calm, collected. Step away if you need to cool down yourself so you don't react purely out of anger.
Looking for the reason behind the behavior, not just the behavior itself. Anthony's story with the twins and the calming corner.
Yeah, that's a great one. Timeouts were power struggles. He realized it was often about frustration during transitions, so he reframed it. Not punishment, but a calming corner with tools to help them regulate.
He practiced it when they were calm.
Yep. Used language like, big feelings, let's take a calming break. It shifted everything. Taught them self-regulation. Eventually, they'd even suggest it themselves.
That's amazing. Understanding the why is key.
Much more effective. And the source has that great tip. Offer do's instead of just don'ts.
Maria and the shirts.
Right. Less defiance when she offered choices within bounds, red shirt or blue shirt, instead of don't wear that. Or saying, do keep your feet on the floor, instead of don't put your feet up.
The brain understands positive instructions better.
That's the idea. Reduces conflict, builds decision-making skills, makes the parent feel more like a guide. Remember the goal. Teaching, respect, accountability, reinforcing good behavior. Consequences should fit the situation.
Hmm.
And always, always follow through.
Builds trust. Teaches that actions have results.
Exactly. So discipline, done thoughtfully, is presented as a cornerstone of security and learning.
It's part of that loving framework.
Mm-hmm.
Then the source broadens the parent's role again, seeing you as a constant teacher. Teaching moments are everywhere.
It really stresses that learning happens way beyond school. Parents teach constantly, just by being there, by doing things, by reacting. The advice is, be proactive. Look for those chances.
In everyday life.
Yeah. Explain how things work. Involve kids in chores. Go outside. Observe things together.
And make learning fun, not a drag. Like little field trips, library, park, are chances to bond and teach values like curiosity.
And always try to answer their questions patiently.
Yeah.
Even if you have to Google it together. Nurture that inquisitiveness.
And teaching isn't just about facts and figures.
No, it's much broader. Social skills, manners, respect, understanding different people, different cultures. Skills, the source says, are crucial today.
Even play dates become teaching opportunities.
Yeah, for practicing social skills, cooperation, communicating with peers.
So it's seeing the world as the classroom, and you're actively engaging your child in it, teaching life skills all the time.
Parents are positioned as the most important teachers, especially for values and real-world stuff.
Okay, bringing it all together now. How everything a parent does now sets the stage for the child's future success.
It paints parents as, like, their kids' heroes, their compass, their rock. And it pulls out some key classic parenting ideas that are extra relevant now.
Like nurturing, but not overprotecting.
Right. The playground example, you can't shield them from everything. Better to teach them how to cope with challenges when they happen. Build resilience.
Structure and routine are crucial. Bedtime routine gets a specific mention for sleep, which affects everything.
Yes. Fostering independence, letting them try things, giving them space, but being ready to help. Don't do everything for them, or you teach helplessness.
Getting involved in their interests, showing support, helps them find passions, build confidence.
Teaching the value of learning itself and a good work ethic.
And then there's that powerful idea of empowerment.
Yeah. Making kids believe nothing is impossible with effort. Get impossible out of their vocabulary. Foster belief in their potential.
Alone time is important for kids, too, like for parents.
Mm-hmm. Time to reflect, process, figure things out on their own.
And the golden rule. Enjoy today, prepare for tomorrow. That balance.
Living in the moment while equipping them for the future. Other ways mentioned. Age-appropriate responsibilities, celebrating effort and small wins, reframing struggles as growth opportunities, encouraging collaboration, teaching self-advocacy.
Standing up for themselves and others.
Right. Setting goals together, using resources.
And this seems really key at the end, letting the child have a direct say in their own future.
Absolutely. Oh. Especially as they get older. Supporting their interests, involve them in big decisions that affect them. It's their life. They'll be more invested in a path they help choose.
That really connects guidance with respecting their autonomy.
It ties together nurturing, structure, empowerment, and the child's own agency.
Wow. Okay. We have covered so much ground here, pulling from this source. As we wrap up this deep dive on parenting in turbulent times, what are the big takeaways?
Well, first, it validates that, yeah, it is hard right now, acknowledges the pressures. But then it quickly shifts to the opportunity within that.
We talked about finding that inner strength, even when you feel like you have none. Turning your own weaknesses into growth opportunities for you and your kids.
Finding better balance, using support, prioritizing quality connection, building that deep bond through love, support, showing up for the small stuff, and seeing play as vital learning.
Communication, really listening, tackling hard topics. And that crucial idea of being the parent first, providing loving structure, even when it's not the easy path.
Because that structure provides security. And finally, seeing yourself as a constant teacher, embedding life skills, empowering them for whatever comes next.
And the bottom line from the source seems to be love. It's the foundation, doing what's best for your child, even when it's tough. That's the goal.
And it wants to leave you, the parent, feeling capable. Like, you can do this. You have what it takes to navigate these times. Be the parent your child needs.
So here's the final thought, drawing from the book's ending, something maybe to reflect on. Years from now, when your kids look back, they probably won't remember the specific financial stress you shielded them from or every time you felt overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
But what they will remember is how you kept going, how you made them feel safe when things felt shaky, and how deep down they knew they were loved and supported. Every single day.
That feeling of security, of being loved unconditionally, That, the source suggests, is the real legacy you're building right now.